Some unionized workers who felt left behind by economic changes voted for Donald Trump. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. In Illinois, Governor Bruce Rauner just vetoed a minimum wage law. Despite that, the head of the Bloomington Normal Trades and Labor Assembly tells GLT correspondent Colleen Reynolds in this Sound Ideas interview, the state of labor is better than some might think. As we approach Labor Day, Mike Matika looks at the state of unions, not the state of the union. Matika says it's an interesting time for labor.
Because I think if you took a long-term view at this, we're in the middle of some profound economic adjustment. And a lot of our labor law and systems were built for industrial America in the 1930s and 1940s. And so, big picture, what do you do with a contingent economy where a lot of people are working 60-hour weeks and totally fried out, and other people can't get enough work to take care of themselves, or working at the fast food or the big box store, and because they're working part-time, multiple jobs, don't have health care, don't have benefits, don't have pensions. I look at how the labor movement had to historically adjust to a changing economy, and sometimes it takes a while for people's organizations to catch up to those things. And at the same time, I think in other areas, things are going well, but at the same time, we in Illinois are kind of an island. Thanks to Mike Madigan, Bruce Rauner was not able to destroy unions like his Republican counterparts in Indiana, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Missouri have done over the last 2 years, and been able to hold up for people's rights within this state.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit more. We know the governor just a few days ago vetoed the minimum wage bill. Last check, it didn't look like there were enough votes to override. What does that say?
Well, I mean, when you look at what Rauner called his turnaround agenda, which really was eroding people's rights, taking away wages, and taking away people's rights to organize, he's not been successful in doing that. He has been successful in using administrative things like his veto and his control of things like the Illinois Department of Labor to stifle law, and in some ways to prevent enforcement of existing Illinois law so that people's wages and people's conditions are not being upheld.
Are you talking about the prevailing wage? Or what other violations of adhering to the law is he guilty of?
And as a laborer, our organization has had 4 lawsuits against Rauner's administration, against his Department of Labor, and we won all 4 of them on the construction prevailing wage for his department's failure to properly set wages and to enforce those. Another one we're watching closely is independent contractor laws, because Illinois on paper has very strict laws which define who is actually an employee, and you have to meet 14 different points, all 14 of them, to actually be considered an independent contractor in the state of Illinois. And we are getting very, very weak enforcement from the Illinois Department of Labor on a variety of measures. And again, that's one way, even though he has not been able to change law legislatively, lack of enforcement can make a real difference for people in a negative way.
And what about the state budget impasse? Has that had an impact specifically on unions and what has happened in their situations?
Well, yeah, what big problem with the state budget impact is infrastructure. You know, if you don't have a state budget, you're not fixing your roads, you're not fixing your bridges, you're not updating our infrastructure. And when the governor complains about jobs leaving Illinois, one of the key ingredients of economic success is having a vital infrastructure system so businesses are attracted to the state because they know they can move their product and people can get to their workplaces. And at the same time, attempts to curtail public employee laws and the refusal to negotiate a contract with the American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees, with AFSCME, you know, those folks have been hanging now throughout the Rauner administration trying just to maintain their contractual rights.
Are there other wins that you have seen in Illinois in, say, the past year?
2 things. It's very fascinating to watch the Fight for 15, which is, again, people at the bottom of the economic tier starting to stand up, people who work in big box minimum wage, who work in fast food, saying we should make enough money to live without public assistance, without needing welfare to go to work every day. And that's a long-term national issue. It's interesting that it's playing itself out at the city and state level more than it is at the federal level. And I think the other thing in the construction trades that we've really been pushing, that I don't think the people, average person doesn't realize, the investment we make out of our own pockets in apprenticeship and training to make sure that there is a competent and ready workforce out there, that we do it without public assistance.
I want to go back quickly to the minimum wage. Governor Rauner has said that economic evidence suggests that a big wage hike actually hurts workers more than it helps. And he, I think, cited, you know, he cites some studies, I think, by the University of Michigan.
Yeah, and there, you know, there's all kinds of studies around those issues. It's very fascinating that a number, I'll use one in New Jersey a couple of years ago, similar academic study that found when minimum wages went up, there really was no detrimental impact on employment. And I think what people forget is right now our economy is set up to make the wealthy wealthier. And that seems to be the big goal, with the hope that somehow that's going to trickle down. The more average people have a decent wage and a decent way of life, that money bubbles up. And it gets spent in the local grocery store, it gets spent at the local restaurant, it gets spent at the local car dealer. What's that magic formula? It's probably different for a small business with two or three employees than it is for Walmart or a large employer that has thousands of people who are dependent upon public assistance to make a living. And how do you do this in a way that's as cognizant of the needs of small business, but also looks at large employers who aren't necessarily paying people a living wage?
Is there some sort of sweet spot or maybe a graduated way of looking at this or scaling it so that small business isn't as heavily impacted?
I'm sure there is, you know, and I mean, you have to look at what's the cost of living in a major metropolitan area versus cost of living in a rural area. You know, our cost of living in Bloomington Normal, our cost of housing is higher than some surrounding cities around here, you know, and how much do you dig down in that? I'm sure there are 37 economists at Illinois State University who could give you 37 opinions on this, but I think it's something we need to talk about in the larger sense as a society, is how do we make sure that we are living in an equitable society, particularly as automation takes more and more jobs.
We're talking with local labor leader Mike Matika. This is Sound Ideas, and I'm Colleen Reynolds, and we're looking ahead at Labor Day and assessing the state of labor. Let's go nationally a little bit, and when you look at Trump election victory, lots of unions got behind him, mostly because of his positions on trade. And so it seems that could usually be counted on as a solid Democratic vote was no longer solid. Do you see that holding, or what do you predict is going to happen there?
It's fascinating because organized labor did not endorse Trump. You know, unions very much backed the Democratic Party. Some union members did go for Trump. And I think the sales job that I'm going to destroy NAFTA, I'm going to take away all these trade agreements, is very appealing. So far, we haven't seen any evidence of a new agreement that's any fairer to people. And a lot of this, I think, has been PR. You know, we look at the Carrier plant in Indiana where he came in and we're going to save all these jobs. Well, he moved the jobs to Mexico anyway. And there's two things that need to be looked at. One is automation, because automation is taking just as many jobs as trade is. And at the same time, people do have legitimate concerns about trade issues. And sometimes the Democrats have been weak in terms of addressing trade issues, making sure that people are protected in the process. And also, there are a lot of tax programs and other things that actually give subsidy to send jobs overseas. So how do we do that in a way that not just protects American jobs, but also gives people equal opportunity with countries that may not be enforcing environmental law, labor laws, organizing, right to organize a union laws that we have in this country?
There are some people who are looking at the labor movement and saying some workers whose wages have remained fairly stagnant because of the economy, and they're so busy working, they're kind of resentful of the idea of giving up more of that to unions when in some cases they feel like maybe they're not seeing the benefits. And so some people are saying unions appear to be becoming more irrelevant. Even at the same time, they are helping and expanding into more workplaces, such as home health care workers and even the medical marijuana industry.
And I think the important thing, you know, that's a line that's been used for many years. Stop and think, do you have a voice on the job or don't you have a voice on the job? And that's the really important role that labor plays. Sometimes people think of unions and their first reaction is, what are the wages and what are the benefits? Those are generally better because people have a voice. And if you're out there as a lone individual, you're often in a take-it-or-leave-it situation. If you have a way as a group of workers to organize together, and people forget that unions are democratic institutions. You know, contracts are negotiated not because an elected union leader sits down and negotiates it. That elected officer has to come back to the membership, and the membership has a voice. And if there's a safety problem, if there is an unfair treatment problem, you've got a mechanism to stand up and say, I deserve to be treated humanely. And that's really the essence of what a labor union is.
So moving ahead and looking at the next 12 months, where do you see unions and the union movement heading? What other work sectors and what other initiatives as far as training? And then, of course, politically.
I mean, it's going to be a very fascinating political year between now and next September. You know, we will have statewide elections here in Illinois. There'll be congressional elections. I think it's going to be very critical that people don't just say they're against Ron or they're against Trump, but you actually have to lay out a vision. And that vision has to be something that appeals to people and say, look, here's how we can improve your lives. Here's how things can be better. Here's some laws that we need to look at, because it's very true that some fascinating numbers that as union membership has declined, middle class wages have stagnated and the rich have gotten richer. So, you know, how do we turn that where do the very wealthy need all the money they're getting, or can we reinvest that back into average people, which eventually the wealthy are still going to make out very well in the process. But it always perturbs me that you have people working full-time who still need government assistance. And I think if people were being paid decently, we could actually cut some taxes, because people would not be dependent on medical assistance and food and welfare.
So a Brookings Institute study found in their survey of people who are employed that 50% of them who are non-union say if an election were held in their workplace tomorrow, they would vote for union representation. Yet union membership is declining. It seems like that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I think two things that happen there. Because union membership is down, a lot of people don't understand the process, and they think that, okay, a union's going to appear at my door one day and make it happen. Unions happen because people organize, and it really only is effective when a group of people get together amongst themselves and organize and then create a union or turn to a union to represent them. But a union is not going to come knocking at your door saying, hey, can we represent you people? You know, it has to be organic. It has to grow from that group of workers. And I think because people don't understand their rights, they don't know that they have that right to organize, to stand up for themselves, and to build an organization that works for them. I think the other difficulty is, particularly with federal labor law, it's a very convoluted process, and companies have basically, it's how to compare it. If you're running a presidential election in the United States and you were the party on the out and you had to do all your campaigning from Canada, how effective could you be? If you're organizing a workplace, that employer can call all the meetings they want to spread all the anti-union messages they want, but the union has to stand outside the gate and only deliver their message during workers' free time. So it creates a real imbalance where people are often frightened, or not uncommon in a factory situation to suddenly machines start getting sticker slapped on them that say, prepared to move this machine to Mexico, you know, and that may or may not be true, but it's a way to frighten people from voting for representation.
Will we see the strengths of local unions at the Labor Day parade? Is ours one of the bigger or better?
You know, it's always fascinating because when we talk to our counterparts in other communities, we get a really good community response to the parade here and very strong attendance. And I always point out to folks, because we really try hard to be a community institution, our local unions do a lot of volunteering, doing a lot of donated labor. I think people see that oftentimes unions are written off as some kind of outside force. And there's been a real effort in McLean County to integrate with the business community, to integrate with community organizations and charities, to show we've got something to contribute and we can play a vital role. We may not have big money, but we can donate our time, and you see that in numerous projects around the community where local union donated labor has made a big difference. And I think the other fun thing with our parade is a lot of parades march through the downtowns. We go into the neighborhood, and I think that just brings people out and makes it more of a community event.
Well, we look forward to seeing you there, Mike, and happy Labor Day.
Thank you very much.
GLT correspondent Colleen Reynolds talked with Laborers Local stalwart Mike Matika.